I'd like for us to go to 2 Samuel, and we are going to discuss the story of David, one period of David's life, and that's the time when Absalom, his son, had led a successful revolt against the king. And David had to flee for his life. And we're going to go to 2 Samuel, chapter 15. 2 Samuel 15, and we're going to read verses 13 and 14. Then a messenger came to David, saying, "The hearts of the men of Israel are with Absalom." David said to all his servants who were with him at Jerusalem, "Arise, let us flee, for otherwise none of us will escape from Absalom. Go in haste, or he will overtake us quickly and bring down calamity on us and strike the city with the edge of the sword." This was a time of really great confusion, as people did not know who eventually would succeed. And loyalties became divided between Absalom and David. Some left with David. Some David sent back because their duties required somebody to keep things functioning. And some David sent back to serve as spies or to give bad counsel to the false king. Now, eventually, Absalom is killed, and David returns to his rightful throne. But it's not a happy return, because David did love his son, and he grieved over his death. And as David returns, he is met by several people as he's about to cross the Jordan back to the main territory of Israel. And I would like for us to spend this evening looking at the characters who he meets, a little bit about their background story, but also to talk about some applications that we can make from this. And the first one we're going to look at is Shimei. I've practiced this and then I can't say it. Shimei would be good. All right. Shimei had actually, when David fled, Shimei was one of those who had turned on David. In 2 Samuel 16, and in verse 5, then King David came to Bahurim. Behold, there came out from there a man of the family of the house of Saul, whose name was Shimei, the son of Gera. He came out cursing continually as he came. He threw stones at David and at all the servants of the king David, and all the people and all the mighty men were at his right hand and at his left. Thus Shimei said when he cursed, get out, you man of bloodshed and worthless fellow. The Lord has returned upon you all the bloodshed of the house of Saul, in whose place you have reigned. And the Lord has given the kingdom into the hand of your son Absalom. And behold, you are taken in your own evil, for you are a man of bloodshed. Then Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, said to the king, "Why should this dead dog curse the Lord, the king? Let me go over now and cut off his head." But the king said, "What do I have to do with you, you sons of Zeruiah? If he curses, and if the Lord has told him, curse David, then who shall say, why have you done so?" Then David said to Abishai and to his servants, "Behold, my son who came out from me seeks my life. How much more now this Benjaminite? Let him alone and let him curse, for the Lord has told him. Perhaps the Lord will look at my affliction and return good to me instead of his cursings this day." So David and his men went on the way, and Shimei went along on the hillside parallel with him. And as he went, he cursed and cast stones and threw dust at him. And the king and all the people who were with him arrived weary, and he refreshed himself there. Shimei, if you noticed, is related to Saul. And That's the one David succeeded as king. He had absolutely no love for David. He basically decided to blame Saul's death on David, even though David had nothing to do with it. And to Shimei, David was just getting his just desserts. That's is what he was deserving because of, from his point of view, the overthrow of Saul. And David's reaction is admirable. He is so tolerant in his own sorrow. He just basically says, well, just let him be. Now take a look at 1 Peter chapter 4. 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 12. Beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery ordeal among you, which comes upon you for your testing, as though some strange thing were happening to you. But to the degree that you share the suffering of Christ, keep on rejoicing, so that also at the revelation of his glory you may rejoice with exultation. If you are reviled for the name of Christ, you are blessed, because the Spirit of glory and of God rests upon you. Make sure that none of you suffers as a murderer or a thief or evildoer or a troublesome meddler. But if anyone suffers as a Christian, he is not to be ashamed, but is to glorify God in this name. Now, David, as we said, is returning to power. This was what happened when he left. But David is returning to power. And Shimei suddenly realized he made a grave mistake. He put his eggs in the wrong basket, if you want to put it that way. In 2 Samuel chapter 19, and starting at verse 19, actually we'll start at verse 18. Then they kept crossing the ford to bring over the king's household and to do what was good in his sight. And Shimei the son of Gera fell down before the king as he was about to cross the Jordan. So he said to the king, "Let not my lord consider me guilty, nor remember what your servant did wrong on the day that when my lord the king came out from Jerusalem, so that the king would take it to heart. For your servant knows that I have sinned. Therefore, behold, I have come today, the first of all the house of Joseph, to go down to meet my lord the king." In fact, Shimei and his household help David cross the Jordan. Now, Abishai is still holding a grudge after all this time. He wants Shimei killed. And in verse 21, "But Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, said, why should not Shimei be put to death for this, because he cursed the Lord's anointed?" David then said, "What do I have to do with you, O sons of Zeruiah, that you should this day be an adversary to me? Should any man be put to death in Israel today? For do I not know that I am king over Israel today?" And the king said to Shimei, "You shall not die." Thus the king swore to him. You see, many rejoiced at David's overthrow. If David returned taking vengeance on everyone in the kingdom who had rejoiced at his overthrow, there'd be a bloodbath. Shimei is just the most vocal, the most notable of these. News of David's mercy, though, would spread and bring stability back to that kingdom that had been divided. And this is the way David got his kingdom back together, by showing mercy. Now, in case you think David's just a wimp, David didn't forget. David did not allow Shimei to die, but he did not forget that Shimei wasn't being really honest with him. And we go over to the end of David's life in 1 Kings chapter 2. In 1 Kings chapter 2, and starting at verse 8, this is where David is giving instructions to Solomon, who's about to succeed him, or has succeeded him. He said, "Behold, there is with you Shimei, the son of Gera, the Benjaminite, of Bahurim. Now, it was he who cursed me with a violent curse on the day that I went to Mahanaim. But when he came down to me at the Jordan, I swore to him by the Lord, saying, I will not put you to death with the sword. Now, therefore, do not let him go unpunished. For you are a wise man, and you will know what you ought to do to him. And you will bring his gray hair down to Sheol with blood." David said, I'm not going to do it. But it doesn't mean that he doesn't want to see justice done. And so he asked Solomon, using his wisdom, to figure out a just way to deliver justice. So what Solomon does is restrict Shimei's movements. Basically, he puts him under the same type of order as if a man committed accidental murder. He basically says, you have to stay within the bounds of Jerusalem. In chapter 2 and then verse 36. So now the king sent and called for Shimei and said to him, build for yourself a house in Jerusalem and live there. And do not go out from there to any place. For on the day that you go out and cross over the brook Kidron, you will know for certain that you shall surely die. Your blood shall be on your own head. Shimei then said to the king, the word is good. As my lord the king has said, so your servant will do. So Shimei lived in Jerusalem many days. Now I want you to notice that. It says many days, not years. He thought, that, well, that's a fair punishment. But 3 years later, Shimei violates the terms while hunting down two runaway slaves. And in verse 42 of chapter 2, so the king sent and called for Shimei and said to him, did I not make you swear by the Lord and solemnly warn you, saying, you will know for certain that on the day that you depart and go anywhere, you shall surely die. And you said to me, the word which I have heard is good. Why then did you not keep the oath of the Lord and the command which I laid to you? The king also said to Shimei, you know all the evil which you acknowledge in your heart, which you did to my father David. Therefore the Lord shall return your evil on your own head. But King Solomon shall be blessed, and the throne of David shall be established before the Lord forever. So the king commanded Benaniah, the son of Jehoiada, and he went out and fell upon him so that he died. Thus the kingdom was established in the hands of Solomon. Now, I want you to know some interesting things. David grants Shimei mercy and it stabilizes his kingdom. Solomon gives Shimei justice and it stabilizes his kingdom. But for a different reason. Solomon showed himself to be a very fair but strong leader. And why we want to look at this and note this is Shimei illustrates that God can use the evil in order to produce good. He's not restricted only using good people. He can use the evil to produce good. Take a look at Romans chapter 8. Romans chapter 8 and in verse 28. And we know that God causes all things to work together for the good of those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. And jumping down to verse 31, what then shall we say to these things? If God is for us, who is against us? He who did not spare his own son, but delivered him over for us all, how will he not also with him freely give us all things? Who will bring a charge against God's elect? God is the one who justifies. Who is the one who condemns? Christ Jesus is he who died. Yes, rather he who was raised, who is at the right hand of God, who intercedes for us. Who will separate us from the love of Christ? Will tribulation or distress, persecution or famine or nakedness or peril or sword? Just as it is written, for your sake we are being put to death all day long. We are considered as sheep to be slaughtered. But in all these things we are overwhelmingly conquered through him who loved us. For I am convinced that neither death, nor life, nor angels, nor principalities, nor things present, nor things to come, nor powers, nor height, nor depth, nor any created thing will be able to separate us from the love of God, which is in Christ Jesus our Lord. Perils, troubles, persecutions, none of those things will imperil us because God will make use of those things to benefit his people. Now there's another person who is involved with David's fleeing and his return. It's a man named Ziba. Where Shimei was a foul-tongued, cursing maniac, Ziba was a sweet talker. He was a manipulator. In 2 Samuel chapter 16, and we're going to start at verse 1. Now when David had passed a little beyond the summit, behold, Ziba, the servant of Mephibosheth, met him with a couple of saddled donkeys, and on them were 200 loaves of bread, and 100 clusters of raisins, and 100 summer fruits, and a jug of wine. The king said to Ziba, "Why do you have these?" And Ziba said, "The donkeys are for the king's household to ride, and the bread and the summer fruit for the young men to eat, and the wine for whoever is faint in the wilderness to drink." Then the king said, "Where's your master's son?" And Ziba said to the king, "Behold, he's staying in Jerusalem. For he said, 'Today the house of Israel will be restored to the kingdom of my father and to me.'" So the king said to Ziba, "Behold, all that belongs to Mephibosheth is yours." And Ziba said, "I prostrate myself. Let me find favor in your sight, O my lord the king." Ziba was Mephibosheth's servant. He was originally Saul's servant, but he became Mephibosheth's servant. And he brings supplies to David and a story. In reward, Ziba is given over all the property of his master because he basically said, "My master didn't come because he's voting for the other side. He's rooting for the other side. And he thinks he's going to become king." Now, in this, David made a grave mistake. He let the much-needed supplies blind him to not seek the other side of the story. See, he condemned Mephibosheth, punished him, when Mephibosheth never got a chance to defend himself, never was able to bring his side of the story. Now, when David returns, Ziba's there again to welcome David back. In 2 Samuel chapter 19 and in verse 17, there were 1,000 men of Benjamin with him, with Ziba, the servant of the house of Saul, and his 15 sons and his 20 servants with him, and they rushed to the Jordan before the king. But this time, Mephibosheth is also there. Take a look at verse 24. Then Mephibosheth, the son of Saul, came down to meet the king, and he had neither cared for his feet, nor trimmed his mustache, nor washed his clothes from the day the king departed until the day he came home in peace. He probably stank. He would have been notable, and notably in distress. You see, Mephibosheth was a crippled man, and his mourning was obvious. And he gives his defense, starting at verse 25. It was when he came from Jerusalem to meet the king that the king said to him, "Why did you not go to with me, Mephibosheth?" So he answered, "O my lord, the king, my servant, deceived me. For your servant said, 'I will saddle a donkey for myself that I may ride on it and go with the king, because your servant is lame.' Moreover, he has slandered your servant to my lord the king. But my lord the king is like the angel of God. Therefore, do what is good in your sight. For all my father's household was nothing but dead men before my lord the king. Yet you set your servant among those who ate at your table. What right do I have yet that I should complain any more to the king?" Now, isn't that an interesting defense? He basically says, everything I had was, you gave it to me. And if you decide you want to take it, well, you're God's spokesman. That's your right. But he said, I do want you to understand, I was going to come, but I got tricked. And I was lied about. Here was a man who appreciated David's kindness. He was a humble man. He refused to protest David's unjust treatment of him. Notice he never said David was wrong for what he did. What a contrast to Ziba's accusation that Mephibosheth was looking to become a king. Now David seeks to correct his error. He does that by restoring the original grant of Mephibosheth's estate. In fact, if you want to go back to 2 Samuel, where he establishes that, in 2 Samuel chapter 9, and starting at verse 9, then a king called Saul's servant Ziba and said to him, "All that belongs to Saul and to all his house I give to your master's grandson. You and your sons and your servants shall cultivate the land for him, and you shall bring in the produce so that your master's grandson may have food. Nevertheless, Mephibosheth, your master's grandson, shall eat at my table regularly." Now Ziba had 15 sons and 20 servants. And then Ziba said to the king, "According to all that my lord the king commands his servant, so your servant will do." So Mephibosheth ate at David's table as one of the king's sons. But I want you to notice that when David tries to fix it, in verse 29, I didn't write that down, going back to chapter 19. Yeah, starting at verse 29. So the king said to him, "Why do you still speak of your own affairs? I have decided you and Ziba shall divide the land." He restored it, but he'd only restored it partly. He said, "I'll give you half. I'll give you Ziba some and give you half." He gives Ziba some because he brought their supplies, gives Mephibosheth the rest. And I think maybe partly because David may not have been really absolutely certain who was telling the truth. And Mephibosheth said to the king, "Let him take it all, since my lord the king has come safely back to his own house." Mephibosheth basically says, "I don't care. Give Ziba all of it." And again we see his humility. He was more concerned that David came back safely than whether he supplied for the rest of his life or not. Now, like I mentioned, David broke the law of God. If you take a look at Deuteronomy chapter 19, Deuteronomy 19, and starting at verse 18, it says, "The judges shall investigate thoroughly, and if the witness is a false witness, he has accused his brother falsely, then you shall do to him just as he intended to do to his brother. Thus you shall purge the evil from among you." David found out that he was lied to. In a court case, that should have made Ziba get the punishment that would have came to Mephibosheth. And David tried to do half and half. He broke the law there. But regardless of that, we can learn from Mephibosheth. Take a look at Philippians chapter 4. Philippians chapter 4 and verse 11. "Not that I speak from want, for I have learned to be content in whatever circumstance I am. I know how to get along with humble means, and I know how to live in prosperity. In any and every circumstance, I have learned the secret of being filled and going hungry, both of having abundance and suffering need. I can do all things through him who strengthens me." Could we show an attitude like Mephibosheth in the face of injustice? Knowing that you were wronged and you were perfectly right, and just say, "I don't care. If that's what it is, that's what it is." I'm going to look at one other individual, Barzillai. Barzillai is also a man who met David when he fled. And for that, we need to go to 2 Samuel chapter 17. And we're going to read verse 27 to 29. "Now when David came to Mahanaim, Shobi, the son of Nahash, from Rabbah, of the sons of Ammon, Mekur, the son of Amiel, from Lodebar, and Barzillai, the Gileadite, from Rogelim, brought beds, basin, pottery, wheat, barley, flour, parched grain, beans, lentils, parched seeds, honey, curds, sheep, and cheese of the herd for David and for the people who were with him to eat. For they said, 'The people are hungry and weary and thirsty in the wilderness.'" They met him wherever where his hideout was, and brought supplies, huge quantities of supplies. Now, Barzillai was an old man, but it did not stop him from aiding the king, nor from traveling just to see the king return. So when the king does return in 2 Samuel 19, and in verse 31, "Now Barzillai, the Gileadite, had come down from Rogelim, and he went on to the Jordan with the king to escort him over the Jordan. Now Barzillai was very old, being 80 years old, and he had sustained the king while he stayed at Mahanaim, for he was a very great man." Now, isn't that interesting? This old man was wealthy. He had been supporting the king's household for the whole time the king was in exile. And he goes with the king to make sure he gets over the Jordan safely. And he was there for that return. And what David does in return is offer him basically a full-funded retirement plan. In verse 33, it says, "The king said to Barzillai, 'You cross over with me, and I will sustain you in Jerusalem with me.' But Barzillai declines the offer. In verse 34, "But Barzillai said to the king, 'How long have I yet to live? And that I should go up with the king to Jerusalem? I am now 80 years old. Can I distinguish between good and bad?' Or can your servant taste what I eat or what I drink? Or can I hear any more the voices of singing men and women? Why then should your servant be an added burden to my lord the king? Your servant would merely cross over the Jordan with the king. Why should the king compensate me with this reward?" I found that interesting. He's saying, I didn't do anything. I'm just here to escort you over the river. He, notice how he just kind of totally ignored however long he's been supporting the king's household. I'm just here to, why should you reward me? Besides, I'm too old. I wouldn't enjoy it. I couldn't hear anybody singing. I can't, you know, taste the food that well anymore. It's just, and I'm not going to live that long. It's just not worth it. You see, he's reached the end of his days. He's not ashamed to admit that he's getting old. In fact, take a look at Ecclesiastes chapter 12. Ecclesiastes chapter 12. And starting at verse 1. "Remember also your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come, and the years draw near when you will say, I have no delight in them. Before the sun and the light and the moon and the stars are darkened and the clouds return after the rain. In the day when the watchmen of the house tremble and the mighty men stoop, the grinding ones stand idle because they are few, and those who look through the windows grow dim. And the doors of the streets are shut as the sound of the grinding mill is low, and one will arise at the sound of a bird, and all the daughters of the song will sing softly. Furthermore, men are afraid of a high place and of terrors on the road. The almond tree blossoms, the grasshopper drags himself along, and the caperberry is ineffective. For man goes to his eternal home, while mourners go about in the street. Remember him before the silver cord is broken, and the golden bowl is crushed. The pitcher by the well is shattered, and the wheel at the cistern is crushed. Then the dust will return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it. Vanity of vanity, says the preacher, all is vanity." See, what was being offered Brazili, I wisely realized, was not something he would be able to enjoy. And he didn't want to be a burden on others while he would decline in his health. Enjoyment to him would be to be able to die among his own family. So Brazili spent his final days basically helping others. He brought aid to David in his time of need. He came to see David across back over the Jordan. And he asked that if any reward was due him, that it be passed on to somebody else. And he names Chimham. In 2 Samuel 19 and verse 37, "Please let your servant return that I may die in my own city near the grave of my father and my mother. However, here is your servant Chimham. Let him cross over with my lord, the king, and do for him what is good in your sight." The king answered, "Chimham shall cross over with me, and I will do for him what is good in your sight. And whatever you require of me, I will do for you." He was well off. He lived a proper life. He did what all Christians ought to do. In fact, take a look at 1 Timothy. 1 Timothy chapter 6. And starting at verse 17. "Instruct those who are rich in this present world not to be conceited or to fix their hope on the uncertainty of riches, but on God who richly supplies us with all things to enjoy. Instruct them to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share, storing up for themselves the treasure of a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of that which is life indeed." Brazilii was a man who bore fruit, and he did it in his old age. Take a look at Psalms 92. Psalms 92, and starting at verse 12. "The righteous man will flourish like the palm tree. He will grow like a cedar in Lebanon. Planted in the house of the Lord, they will flourish in the courts of our God. They will still yield fruit in their old age. They shall be full of sap and very green. To declare that the Lord is upright, he is my rock, and there is no unrighteousness in him. And here's another man. David remembers until the day he dies. Take a look at 1 Kings, chapter 2. 1 Kings chapter 2, and starting at verse 7. But show kindness to the sons of Barzillai, the Gileadite, and let them be among those who eat at your table, for they assisted me when I fled from Absalom your brother. Barzillai by this time has already passed, probably. But David says, I want you to take care of his sons, because he took care of me. Now I want you to think one other application here from this story. You see, our king left this world, rejected by his own people. And one day he too will return, and all will meet him. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, and in verse 13. But we do not want you to be uninformed, brethren, about those who are asleep, so that you will not grieve as do the rest who have no hope. For we believe that Jesus died and rose again, even so God will bring with him those who have fallen asleep in Jesus. For this we say to you by the word of the Lord, that we who are alive and remain until the coming of the Lord will not precede those who have fallen asleep. For the Lord himself will descend from heaven with a shout, with the voice of the archangel, and with the trumpet of God, and the dead in Christ will rise first. Then we who are alive and remain will be caught up together with them in the clouds, to meet the Lord in the air. And so we shall always be with the Lord. Therefore comfort one another with these words. No, we didn't see our Lord leave. But we do live lives that show how we would have treated him. Take a look at Matthew chapter 25. Matthew 25, and verse 37. Then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? And when did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or naked and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and come to you? The king will answer and say to them, truly I say to you, to the extent that you did it to one of these my brothers of mine, even the least of them, you did it to me. And our king will not forget. Take a look at Hebrews chapter 6. Hebrews 6 and verse 10. For God is not so unjust as to forget your work and the love which you have shown toward his name, in having ministered and in still ministering to the saints. And when our king returns, what manner of servant is he going to find in you? An evil and profane person? A sly and cunning? Humble and content? Or someone who's wise and generous? Hope you'll think about these things. If there's anyone here tonight who's not yet a child of God, there's no better time than right now to put on Christ. And for those who are children of God, would like the prayers of your brethren on behalf, why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song that was selected.